Welcome to That's Your Opinion.
And you're wrong.
Woo! Part two!
Part two. Me and you and part two.
Let's go. Part deux.
Part deux.
So we underestimated how much we had to say.
Probably both, because there's just so much. It's over and under somehow. Somehow all the things. We have so many thoughts about this. There's just so much to dive into. And, of course, we're talking about these specific things. The specific author, J.K. Rowling. A specific game, book, movie series. And also zooming out and looking at larger themes and how this all ties together for folks in daily life. And why do we care about this topic anyway? Well, there's lots of reasons. And as we dive into part two, we want to, again, give some trigger warnings. We will be talking about topics that hit on transphobia, homophobia, racism, and also anti-Semitism.
With a heavy focus on the anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm.
In this episode. So this all kind of comes from this kind of really old connection of Harry Potter with the goblins in Harry Potter. So if you've never seen the movies, the goblins work in the wizarding bank called Gringotts.
Yeah.
And we'll go into more details about there's some differences between them in the books and in the movies. But also, if you didn't listen to the first part and you are interested about the trans angle to this, listen to our part one episode where we go into details about thoughts and opinions about that. So how about we give folks some context?
We found some really great quotes in our research from different sources on this component of like the depiction of goblins in Harry Potter and just some different perspectives. So Mick Abrahamson from Uppercut said, quote, "A discussion about the goblins in Harry Potter grew with it. While the books didn't provide much detail about the banking species, the movies painted a much clearer picture, one that many associated with Jewish stereotypes, specifically large hooked noses, controlling the wealth, and being greedy. There's been no acknowledgement or apology of the alleged accidental connection from Rowling about this. But let's discuss how and why people are forming these connections, starting with the history of the goblin mythos."
Mm-hmm. So Mick brings up two things that are actually pretty interesting here, in that the book actually describes the goblins as very differently than what the movie does. So in the book, the goblins are dark-skinned, they have what she says sharp features, and they have a disagreeable attitude. That's all she uses to describe them. And actually, J.K. Rowling is pretty well known for this in the Harry Potter books. She does not describe people in a lot of detail.
Right.
And she's been quoted by saying she did that on purpose because she wanted people to be able to imagine the world in the way they wanted to imagine it. So in the movies, however, that is the description. They have long fingers. They have hooked noses. They dress in kind of spiffy suits most of the time, and they are control of all the money in the wizarding world. And I think this is interesting to point out because, as we talked about in our first episode, J.K. Rowling sold the rights to the movies in 1999, which meant by the time we were getting to the part where you meet the goblins, which you meet them kind of in the first movie, but you see a lot more of them later on, they had deviated pretty significantly from what J.K. Rowling had described, and there's no indication that she was actually in control of what WB decided to use as a goblin.
Yeah, and, you know, I have no information to back it up, but I would not be surprised if she didn't have much influence over it. And I think that the way that the goblins are depicted in the movies kind of ties to, like, some of those ways that I think we've seen the stereotypes of them and kind of tying that to anti-Semitism. Historically, like, represents that would make sense because a lot of creatives and writers and people that are, like, involved in sort of creating that image in the motion picture. And so I think that is going to capture some of those things that may be unintentional to those folks or unconscious, but still...
Or ignorant,
yeah. That kind of show that's out there and can come up in this way. And it's still, again, intent versus impact may have an impact. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but we don't know. We don't know what her involvement with that was. But regardless, there is a difference between the books and the movies.
Mm-hmm. And again, we said this in the first episode. Mm-hmm. We're going to say it again. Mm-hmm. This is not a J.K. Rowling defense podcast.
Absolutely not.
We are not here to be like, oh, she's not anti-Semitic. No. We're just pointing mm-hmm. out kind of interests about this. Mm-hmm. And at the end, I have a question I'm gonna ask Miriam, and I'm not gonna tell her yet because I want true response to this question. But it's kind of related to all this and yeah. how we're thinking about homogeneity of groups.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I said this in a previous podcast too, but Tom Felton, who plays Draco Malfoy, has stated that J.K. Rowling had a much smaller hand in how the movies looked and came together than mm-hmm. people assume.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I was thinking about this. I think part of what's confusing people is that they're thinking about it in terms of like George R.R. Martin for Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. where he was extremely involved. Uh-huh. Everything had to go through him. Every choice went through him, and he's the author. Yet that's not normal.
It's not. Also, in his writing, excruciating details about someone's eyes for like 8 pages, right? So true. I feel like that's just the type of author he is. So I'm not surprised that he was so involved. But yeah, that's not necessarily standard practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Mick goes on to kind of talk about how, and this is a quote, goblins are heavily featured in many European countries' folklore and vary from mischievous spirits to malevolent thieves.
Mm-hmm.
Some stories tie the origin of goblins to Judaism.
Right.
Now, in the, academic world,
mm-hmm.
this assertion is debated, as other scholars assert goblins are associated with pre-Judeo-Christian fairies. Mm-hmm. So, like, more pre-Christian, I guess you could say pagan beliefs that existed in Europe before then, as fairies.
Mm-hmm.
And that goblin-type creatures came from that tradition of fairies. But we also have evidence that goblins or things related to the goblin mythos exist in other mythologies, particularly in Africa. In southern Africa, there's a story of a small hook-nosed, ugly creature that tries to sleep with women.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of an old way that these cultures explained why some children are born with disabilities.
Mm.
And then in Japan, they're called Tengu.
Mm-hmm.
And Tengu are these winged creatures that have long hooked noses, and they usually have a little hat and a little cane, and they just kind of cause mischief. And I point this out, and I want to bring this into the conversation, because I think something I've noticed is that frequently when we're talking about how mythology can end up resembling things in current day, it frequently ends up connecting itself around the European understanding,
right,
of these concepts. And I think it can lend itself to thinking that whenever anyone uses the image of a goblin, that it's immediately anti-Semitic. Mm-hmm. If you keep it in, if you have the context that the story of a goblin independently arose out of Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think some of these, like, stereotypes and really harmful anti-Semitic kind of imagery around that are anti-Semitic, I personally just had that context when I was in school, right? Like, learning about it from that European perspective of what happened in Europe, like pre-World War II, how did the Nazis use anti-Semitic imagery and language to promote fascism and, you know, just fascist propaganda even before World War II and to this day, you know, how over time that's been depicted. But it was very focused of like, what did this look like in Europe? And then maybe how has this spread to the US and how do mm-hmm. we see it today? But it's as if the rest of the world doesn't exist in terms of examples that I saw, mm-hmm. like in high school and my college education. Mm-hmm. Really the focus was on Europe mostly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which kind of makes sense because, you know, like one of the most, you know, influential points in history,
mm-hmm.
World War II and the Holocaust,
of course,
yeah. is European based. And yes, mm-hmm. in fact, the Nazis purposefully mm-hmm. connected goblins with Jews.
Right.
They did this on purpose. And it appears through literature, as is pointed out by Mick in this article, that in the works of G.K. Chesterton, author of the 1908 work Orthodoxy, the use of goblins and Jews was fluid. And even in Charles Dickens' work in Oliver Twist, Fagin, who's a thief in the novel, is described as the Jew.
Mm-hmm.
So many of these myths of goblins didn't carry over to the New World because
right.
it doesn't actually make sense
mm-hmm.
that that goblins are just Jewish spirits. Like, what? Doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But they did persist in Europe. And the Nazis tried very, very hard mm-hmm. to make these connections that Jews are mistrustful, they're dirty, they, you know, all these awful things.
Yeah. And I think that some of those things that we learn over time or around those important events really stand out. And sometimes the, you know, outside of the context, they're just conflated. And we just assume that if something, you know, seems similar, it's that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so it can be nuanced. And I think it just maybe takes a little more exploration to figure out what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of us don't have a lot of time or mental energy for. So we just, you know, sort of have this, again, kind of going back to last episode, black or white interpretation about things that can be kind of rigid. So this is a way that we can kind of take a step back and look at what's actually going on. And I like that we have like a lot of diverse perspectives, because Dr. Rabbi Joe David also talked about the depiction of Jewish people and like the ties to religion. So he says that whole concept of the Jew as misshapen and ugly actually comes from early Christian writings. The way the church looked at the Jews, the more that they, the Jews, continued to reject Catholicism and the later Protestantism, mm-hmm. the more ugly they became, the more the church preached about their ugliness and their corruption and the corruption of their soul. The church's teachings projected that because Jews didn't accept Jesus, that they were cursed. And that's why they didn't have a homeland. And that's why they roamed the earth. That's why they were a stateless people. They're dirty. How can they be clean? They have no place to wash because they don't have a land that's their own. It's their fault. If they would only come to terms with the idea that Jesus could save them, everything would be fine, but they don't. No matter what the church did to try to get Jews to convert to Catholicism, they won't.
Mm-hmm. And this is so also interesting because now we're seeing not only that the Nazis do this on mm-hmm, purpose, mm-hmm. it's even older.
Yeah.
It goes even further back
yeah.
to ancient Christianity. Also saying, like, hey, because Jews don't want to do what we want them to do,
mm-hmm.
they're ugly and cursed. Though
mm-hmm.
so it traces even further back, and I think what I find interesting about this is that, and it, well, I don't know, I guess I'm gonna pose this as a question. What do you think about situations where something has been paired with something for so long
mm-hmm.
that now it they connote each other?
Yeah.
But that isn't to mean that inherently the object mm-hmm. is carrying an ism,
mm-hmm.
if that question makes sense.
I think it's hard to untangle it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that our brain is just doing the automatic thing it does. And again, if it looks similar to something that we've known to be good, bad, or indifferent in our minds, we just label it that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really hard for anyone. I think that regardless of who we are, our background, our identities, I think human beings do that. And I think it takes more time and mental energy to take a step back. And I think some of us are used to that flex more than others.
Mm-hmm.
I think you being one of them, I think that is like a big part of who you are and like why we have these topics that we're podcasting about is context.
Mm-hmm.
You think a lot about context and it takes time and effort mm-hmm. to do that. So I think that culturally we see this phenomenon. And when I say culturally, you know, I'm thinking just how this presents, like, in the U.S. Just this is, you know, these are the conversations and the topics and things we're talking about. These are tweets from people in the States. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people may have different opinions worldwide. And when we talk about bigger things like anti-Semitism, racism, and how those things like show up, maybe the flavor and the way it shows up is different worldwide, but it's still pervasive, right? Mm-hmm. So when we talk about something like anti-Semitism, yeah, it's worldwide. And I think whether someone's in Europe or here in the States or in another part of the world, we may still do this thing where it's so tangled up, we just have this automatic reaction to mm-hmm. it.
And I think that's such an important point of, like, it is kind of culturally and contextually mm-hmm. driven mm-hmm. because I, as a kid, coming from a family from the Caribbean, mm-hmm. I had no context that the bankers could possibly be seen as a Jewish caricature.
Right.
That never crossed my mind. Mm-hmm. I had just, we have a different version of a goblin in Haitian culture. And I was like, oh yeah, a little creepy creature mm-hmm. that likes to steal things. That makes sense. That exists in mm-hmm. other cultures. And to me, I think, and I don't know, just, I'm gonna say something controversial yet brave, that I think this situation highlights a cultural implicit bias mm. that I think more people need to engage with.
Mm. What is the cultural implicit bias, in your own words?
That when you see a creature uh-huh. that has a hook nose and is greedy, why is the first thing you go to Jew?
Right.
I think that deserves more critical thought from a lot of people. Are you doing the work in yourself mm-hmm. to split those
right
apart? Yeah. It has become a story trope at this point. So mm-hmm. are we doing the work to split those apart?
Yeah, and I think we're not doing that enough.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Because I also think of how functionally mm-hmm. is a goblin different from a leprechaun?
Right.
And yet, people don't automatically associate leprechauns with Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with Ireland, the place where the idea was originated. So I think what makes this uncomfortable, particularly for me, is that I think it reveals mm. a cultural implicit bias that we're not challenging in that we as a people mm-hmm. need to think about why we still have this connection in our brain, other than the fact that it's a very popular literary trope, mm-hmm. but also why we're not pushing against that part of it either. Why are we just attacking authors for using it mm-hmm. instead of doing the internal work of being like, yes, maybe we should stop relying on that trope. It's old. We can make new tropes. We should make new tropes. But also, are you interacting with that internal piece of like, why did I mm-hmm. go straight to Jew?
Right. And I think that, like, from my personal experience, you know, it would honestly probably take a lot of pieces for me to say, oh, that's coming across to me as anti-Semitic, and like that is a depiction of a Jew. You know, I don't think of a goblin in a bank and immediately think, oh, this is like, you know, basically representing someone that's Jewish, right? And so I think people have a lot of opinions on that. Like, I think part of this conversation is this pressure to, and judgment that we have, that I think, you know, it's just maybe probably a topic for another episode of if we're not woke enough, if we don't realize that, mm-hmm. right? And I think it's a noble thing to want to be aware, but also if that's the first thing we're thinking, is this just, to more your point, something that we've internalized as just what happens, and we just kind of keep it moving because mm-hmm. we, you know, is that complacency and acceptance?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like conversations we've had. This is probably going to seem off topic, but like watching dating or reality shows where it's all heterosexual, it's just all straight couples mm-hmm. dating. You don't see diversity. They're mostly cis. They're mostly white. why am I consuming that? Mm-hmm. Why am I watching all of these shows when I have a choice to not? Or to just, you know, question, why am I not upset there's not other content even? Mm-hmm. When someone else that I know has to point out, hey, there should be more content. Oh, okay. I guess I've accepted that cishet relationships are, you know, the quote-unquote default.
Mm-hmm. And marketable.
You know?
And people want to see that. And it appeals to a greater audience. So, like, yeah, there is an acceptance a lot of times, just a cultural acceptance. Like, mm-hmm. this is how this is.
Yeah, and I think that not to make that example as, like, the same, because this is related but not the same. I think that we do that with things that are racist-based or, you know, anti-Semitic. Like, we do it with lots of things. Mm-hmm. And I think it's problematic. Mm-hmm. I think that it's a different form of ignorance, right? That complacency. Like, it's ignorance, I think we think of as, oh, I'm not noticing this or I'm just not aware. But then there's also an ignorance in the noticing and just not even examining it at all. Mm-hmm. Just kind of keeping it moving. Mm-hmm. What's up with that?
Right. What's up with that?
What's up with that?
And why is it more comfortable in some ways to just be like, mm-hmm. yeah, that's something that I automatically connect those two things together. Mm-hmm. That doesn't feel good, but I'm just going to move on and just say that you should stop showing me this thing instead of connecting with, but why do I go there?
Yeah.
And how do we work to disentangle these two things?
I'm gonna say something that's probably unpopular. Is this just, I think it's lazy. Mm. And I think it's rooted in privilege. You know, I find that, myself included, people that have more privilege than other people I talk to, like, they do less work mm-hmm. when it comes to this. Mm-hmm. They don't notice these things to even be conscious to work on them. So I think that's step one. But then when you're conscious of it, it is in some ways painful to admit that this is happening in so many spaces in your life mm-hmm. that you might have a lot of work to do and you might have a lot of things to untangle. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And it, I think it's also interesting, like, how this is generally talked about. So mm-hmm. Jon Stewart, in his podcast, The Problem with Jon Stewart, mm-hmm. He actually reignited mm-hmm. this whole conversation. Because they were talking about bar mitzvahs, of all mm-hmm. things. And then he told this little anecdote to his co-hosts about how he'll go up to people that say they like Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. And he'll be like, oh, do you remember the part with the Jews? Mm-hmm. And people were like, what? What are you talking about? He's like, the goblins, they're Jews. Mm-hmm. And then people feel very, in what he was playing is like, people feel very off-put and very upset and very mad about when they figured out that the goblins are supposed to be Jews. But my problem with that is that we don't know that that's true.
Yeah, right. Right, exactly.
We don't actually know that J.K. Rowling meant those goblins to be Jews, and not that that has just become such a trope mm-hmm. in fantasy that it's now completely intertwined. Like, another trope that mm-hmm. exists that a lot of people probably have interacted with but do not trolls mm-hmm. being dark-skinned brutes mm-hmm. comes from mm-hmm. slavery.
Right. Yeah.
That is also not interrogated mm-hmm. very often. Or witches.
Yes.
Having mm-hmm. hooked noses and being ugly, which comes from the Catholic Church, again, saying that because they reject Jesus, they are cursed to be hideous and mm-hmm. bad. And I think these things, when they're unexamined, start leaking into other things. How frequently, in regardless of whatever you're watching, the villain is either what, hideous mm-hmm. or gay mm-hmm. or queer coded, at least.
Right. And the harm in the harm that's, I think, lost on the folks that they may feel that they're woke and they may feel that they're progressive, like a lot of folks will use that terminology. And then, you know, call out, right? Kind of like you're saying with Jon Stewart. Oh, look at this thing. Let's highlight it and work on it. And in a way, what harm is that doing? Because you're talking about a group of people and highlighting this thing. And this goes back to our last episode in terms of the extra harm that it caused the trans community, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the way we have these conversations is important. And some of this work, to be honest, just needs to be done by ourselves on an individual level. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we should have bigger conversations about all these topics because it's important. But also, we're missing the plot when we don't have those conversations that, you know, and do the work that you are speaking to.
Mm-hmm. When is it a case of highlighting?
Mm-hmm.
And when does it turn into a case of gotcha?
Hmm.
You're not as liberal as I am. You don't know as much as I do. You are not a good person because you don't know every single piece of history about every single culture. When does it start turning into that? And to me, that's where I start getting concerned.
Yep.
About, are we actually turning off potential allies because they just don't know everything?
Mm-hmm.
And when you get hit with a gotcha, your immediate response is not, "Wow, thank you for showing me that." It's, "Well, fuck you."
I agree. I think that shame is a conversation killer. And I think that a lot of things can trigger shame and embarrassment. And I think that there are some things that we're ignorant to. And some of it, I think, as a society, we say are, like, not really forgivable or not okay, right? To just claim that, like, racism doesn't exist and these other things don't exist is just ridiculous. And then there's us trying to exist in the middle, right? Continuing to learn and grow. And I think that it can be sometimes a fine line of the highlighting and then going down the rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. As they did with Harry Potter and TERFs and transphobia and just like that whole conversation, I think that what ends up highlighting is people on either end of the conversation at the extremes and leaves everyone in the middle out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then those people either feel dumb and they just go and hide and feel like, oh, I don't know what I'm talking about, so I don't want to, you know, be wrong, or more emboldened in the couple facts they think are true, and there's no willingness to go into the gray.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there can be some bad consequences of that. And I also feel like it is inherently oppressive to and harmful to say that somebody should be like woke to a certain degree to be a good, insert, you know, political affiliation or whatnot here. Because not all of us have the same access to information, to time, to energy, because of all of these different things in our life. And that's not to make excuses, again, going back to my point, for just being lazy, but we all have different capacities to access things, mm-hmm. right? We don't all get the same education. I've had a lot of time unlearning just nonsense that I've learned in school that is completely wrong. That takes time. And I'm also trying to live a life, maintain friendships, right? Like, there's just realities of that. And I'm not going to be motivated to spend spare time doing that if I feel like everyone I talk to just thinks that I'm a crappy person.
Exactly.
And doesn't allow me the grace to fail or to make a mistake or to ask a question that I might honestly feel like is a dumb question, but I've done my research and I just want to ask a friend, like, what do you think about this topic? I think it shuts down growth and connection.
I agree. And I think attached to that too, it can start turning conversations that probably should be happening within groups
mm-hmm.
into public conversations
yeah.
with other groups.
Mm-hmm.
And then it starts looking disorganized.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns into public infighting. And I'm very sensitive as a queer Black person
mm-hmm.
to just how dangerous public infighting can be
mm-hmm.
to groups in those situations. So we're going to poke more about that and also going to dive into some more fun Hogwarts Legacy
yes.
drama connected to the goblins and blood libel. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what that term means and you we'll want to know more, mm-hmm. stick around. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back. And we're back.
Yeah.
So we're gonna turn and talk a little bit about Hogwarts Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
So not too long ago, a gameplay trailer came out where we were introduced to one of the primary villains that was gonna be in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And his name is Ranrok.
Hmm.
So Ranrok is leading a goblin rebellion against the wizarding world, and teams up with the dark wizards to achieve his goal. You actually hear about this goblin rebellion a little bit in the books about how the goblins really resisted this kind of subservience they had to the wizards, and decided that, like, hey, this is not a thing. We need to fight against this. In fact, you hear about it from, I think, Hermione, because of course she knows everything. But it's not really elaborated on. So they're really elaborating on this story here. But the only thing you hear from Ranrok is that he is going to kidnap the main character, so the person that you're playing as you're playing the game, who's a 15-year-old child who learned late about his magical powers. So he's starting, well, he, she, they, whoever you're playing, is starting the game, starting at Hogwarts at year 5, which is unheard of. So it's super late. So this made a lot of people very upset, and the Daily Dot, in fact, said that Ranrok was a very clear example of anti-Semitism. Which, of course, if you're not familiar already, you would be like, why? Like, is it just because he's a goblin? But no, there is context. It calls back to one of the most horrific anti-Semitic tropes used to villainize Jews, which is called the myth of blood libel, or the accusation that Jews kidnapped and murdered non-Jews.
And more about this blood libel myth for those that aren't familiar, it is that false allegation that Jews used to use the blood of non-Jewish, usually Christian children, for ritual purposes. The Nazis really made use of this to demonize Jews, and this myth would be used to incite pogroms, so lynchings against Jewish ghettos.
And there's two things about this before we, go further about kind of perspectives about this from different places. Is one, this was information from a gameplay trailer. So I'm actually playing Hogwarts Legacy, so I'm kind of working through the game, and I've noticed that this actually doesn't seem to be a plot point.
Oh, so the way that it was like sort of depicted in the trailer is really not connecting to the gameplay?
I mean, it's there in that basically what happens, spoilers for Hogwarts Legacy in case you want to play the game. Oh, this is like a really early spoiler. Basically what happens is you, the main character, find a thing, and you have this magical ability to open the thing that other people apparently do not have. So Ranrok, the goblin, knows that you have this magical ability to do this. So he wants the thing from you, so he starts sending out his collaborators to try to either kidnap you or force you to give him the thing. Which, I don't know about you, but this sounds like a very classic story, villain, arc. It's kind of standard. But the reason it's not standard is because of the connection people are making that all the goblins in the game are Jews.
And so I think this ties back to and we've heard a quote from him before, Rabbi David, kind of further elaborating on that point of kind of like connecting things in the game and like things we see to anti-Semitism. So he says, just because a character has a hooked nose does not mean that the character is supposed to be Jewish. Just because a character is focused on money does not mean that character is being stigmatized and made a Jewish stereotype. Just because people are either wealthy or have money or work in banks doesn't make them Jewish. Why can't we say, oh, that's a WASP, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant stereotype? He clarifies further, there's enough real anti-Semitism in this world that we run into every day without going to look for it in a way that perpetuates these antiquated stereotypes.
Yeah, I like this quote in that I think it really kind of connects what we were saying previously of it. I think what Rabbi is doing is he's challenging us to be more critical about this. Of just because you see a hook-nosed, small, greedy creature, why is it the first thing you think is, oh, look, a Jewish person? Like, that's incredibly disturbing, actually, when you kind of think of it from that perspective. And I think a thing that's not even connected to the quote, but just connected to kind of this whole situation of why aren't we giving people grace that maybe they didn't mean to be anti-Semitic. Maybe it is just a trope. Maybe no one's actively trying to harm the Jewish community. Mm-hmm. Now, I will hold, though, there's actually more context to this. So I didn't put this in the notes because I wanted to get your live feedback, live reaction to this.
Sure.
The original game director of Harry Potter Legacy, turns out he's a neo-Nazi.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Wow.
So this was found out about 3 years into game production, around the same time that we found out that J.K. Rowling was a huge TERF.
Oh my god.
Right around the same time. We learned a lot of truths about people in 2020.
Something about that year.
Time of COVID. Boring news cycle, I guess.
Yeah.
But basically, we found out that he had a YouTube channel where he would post rants about how Jews are taking over the world and how there's a new world order and all this just classic neo-Nazi stuff. I am purposely not saying his name because I refuse to give him a platform.
Mm-hmm.
So with that context, does that change your opinion of the story?
In terms of, is it anti-Semitic and targeting?
Like, knowing now that very possibly a neo-Nazi was originally in charge of the plot, does that change your opinion on the anti-Semitism of the story?
It biases me to be more curious about it. That it could be. I don't know that that's a guarantee, but I think that it's definitely more likely because it's the context, right? And I think just like we talked about with the book and the way that J.K. Rowling had that agency over how she depicted things and how then there were a lot of hands in the pot for the movies that were not hers, that were decisions made by other people, that changes the way that that's portrayed. So yeah, that does skew the way I think about it, and it's suspect. Right,
I definitely agree. I think when I heard this, I was like, "Ooh, okay, so it's actually possible."
Oh, very much
that the original creator of this meant for this to be an anti-Semitic underpinning, undercurrent with that. And I think the thing that then introduces not so much a struggle, but like a different connotation for it for me, turns into, okay, but even if that's a thing, right? And even if, you know, whoever, there should have been a sensitivity person there connected to this, whatever. Now, several years later, 5 years later, when the game has come out, knowing that if we found out about this 3 years in, then we probably already have the storyboard. We already have started building out the world. We've already started building out the stuff right there. Is it then the option that we are just going to go ahead and scrap the entire project, get rid of the entire thing, because one person on this team is a neo-Nazi? Or do we, as a group, try to engage in what Rabbi is saying and challenge our initial automatic assumption that these creatures are goblins? Because I think, to me, this is the linchpin. If you think the creatures are goblins, this is blood libel. If you do not think the creatures are goblins, it's a classic, kind of boring villain arc.
I think the latter, and the reason I say that is there are a million examples. There's so many examples. We think of just like Kevin Spacey in House of Cards, J.K. Rowling, and like Harry Potter. I could go on and on. You know, do we throw everyone else on the cast of House of Cards away and just say like no one should ever watch the show ever, and you're a terrible person for ever watching it because of Kevin Spacey? This happens all the time. And there are bad actors that are known and unknown. I think we have to be mindful of how I'm consuming this and what I'm doing. Like, how is that, putting money in this person's pocket or not? And am I going to engage with this or not? Question one. Question two, if I'm going to engage in it, what's my perspective? Mm-hmm. But I think that just like always has to be there, that second piece of what's my perspective, because in this case, you played the game and you knew about this person. I didn't know, right? I could easily play this game and not know that. Mm-hmm. I'm still consuming the game, right? I'm still like engaging with it. So I feel like we have to have that critical lens, because this is just so pervasive in our society and our culture, these people. And whether or not this person like is conscious of what they're doing, of course their beliefs are going to be tied into what they do mm-hmm. as a creator in creating this plot line. That's just like unavoidable. And I think this is just the truth. So, I mean, it may be an unpopular opinion. Don't care. There are so many people that are neo-Nazis out there, that are fascists, that have, we see people that like, we might even say are allies in a community, like believe in like TERF ideology mm-hmm. or use TERF term, not like dog whistle terms, and not even be conscious of it. Doesn't mean it doesn't suck mm-hmm. or that it's not cringy. Like it's still not okay. So I think in a world where we're going to engage in a lot of levels of bad and levels of not good, what do we do with that?
Right. And I struggle strongly with taking down an entire team of creatives mm-hmm. who've spent their livelihood, their talents, their joy, their work, and deplatforming all of it because one person who yeah. no longer is attached to the project.
Right.
And in fact, his name is attached to nothing, which to me is the perfect example of right. deplatforming.
Yeah.
We're not putting his name on anything. We're not sharing his YouTube. I'm not saying his name right now because you don't need to seek him out to learn whatever he was doing.
Yeah.
Deplatform him. Mm-hmm. Deplatform him. Take back the story mm-hmm. in Hogwarts Legacy mm-hmm. and choose to see it differently. Choose to not engage in what he wanted you to engage in because he is an awful person.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. And I think that that's going back to like who we give power to. And I think that that is inherently what we have to watch out for in cancel culture, you know, in that word of like, just cancel the person, throw it all away, quote unquote. Well, if you throw this one person away, you might throw the whole team away. This is people's livelihoods, people that, you know, are good people who are doing good work and just want to be creatives, right? And mm-hmm. that's for so many examples, like in the arts. I feel like this happens like with film, we've just talked about a bunch of examples, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Even just related to Harry Potter, it's like every type of media is involved, and it's unfortunately inescapable. Mm-hmm. There are going to be those bad people and those bad actors that just suck. And yeah, what's their involvement? Like, if we know that that person is still having a platform and is spouting rhetoric that's harmful and like living their best life, then yeah, different than what you said is actually going on with this person. Mm-hmm. And I think it is a way that you're showing right now live that you're taking the power back of like not highlighting him, you know, mm-hmm. which I do love that. But there are so many people in the public eye that are known that we just like give more of that power to by saying like, again, throw it all away. Mm-hmm. Like everyone else on the crew, the cast, everyone else that's involved in a show or a movie, there's so many examples. What's the actual impact of that on everyone else? Mm-hmm. And are we, again, losing the plot and in the process of canceling and throwing it all away, hurting more people than we need to that are already hurt? Because the fact is harm's already been done.
Exactly. Harm's already been done. And are we allowing the bad actor to then do more harm?
Yep.
By harming all these other people that were around them mm-hmm. and probably had no clue
yeah.
what this person was up to. I have no clue if anyone on the team knew about mm-hmm. this. Apparently there are some reports that Warner Brothers knew mm. about this person's YouTube channel and said that they didn't care. So who knows? Maybe we needed to platform Warner Brothers. I'm sure. But I think mm-hmm. it connects what we were talking about in the previous episode about, you know, deplatforming, and we don't want to accidentally, you know, paradoxically bring attention mm-hmm. to this, of pushing to boycott the entire thing when all that's going to do is trigger the people that weren't connected to this and were not, don't want to be seen in this light to then start talking out, just then start having to defend themselves, start mm-hmm. bringing more attention, And then that starts shifting the view away from this person's bad, let's not talk about them, into we're going to have this prolonged, contracted exploration of all these pieces to it that it really is only helping spread that person's ideology. And we have this quote from Elia Smith from Forward, which is an independent Jewish nonprofit. And I love this. I think it's really funny. They say, the Potter goblins are diminutive, hook-nosed, saurian creatures with creepy long fingers and crafty natures. They have exceptional financial skills and stop at nothing to acquire or protect money and precious objects. It is anti-Semitic that anyone would encounter such a character and think, aha, a Jew. I think this quote actually just very quickly summarizes our kind of conversation about this, of like, again, is it anti-Semitism all the way down? Is that what this turns into? And I think we need to challenge ourselves to be more critical about this.
Right. Is what we're consuming anti-Semitic? Are we in our own way being anti-Semitic? And whether or not that's intentional, it doesn't matter, right? If we see these characteristics or things that have historically been used to be oppressive and anti-Semitic, and that's the first thing we think of, or if it never comes to mind at all, and we're consuming content that is blatantly anti-Semitic, it's all on us at the end of the day to question that. And also, I think the harder point is to then, in that process, not get lost in the process, not go down rabbit holes that, to be honest, end up hurting us or other people, right? And I think that's very true for the online space, where we just end up hurting each other, you know, or ourselves by consuming so much content that is related to these situations. And I think that we might have to do some things differently.
I agree. I think this is one of those conversations where the perspectives are, one, going to change based on who you are and how you've been harmed. And I want to also make it clear that I am not telling the Jewish community, feel different.
Right.
Feel exactly the way that you feel. We're all entitled to our emotions. Feel exactly what you feel. I am actually more interested about the non-Jewish community. And what are we doing?
Yeah.
Related to this. And also just pointing out that, like, in this situation, we heard from Mick Abrahamson, who was very harmed by this. Then we have the middle view, which is Rabbi, who was like, no, this is harmful, but also it's not necessarily directly talking about Jews. And then we have Elia, who says up in their article that if they hear one more person connect a Jew to a goblin, they're going to self-explode.
Right.
So three different levels from the same community of how they're interacting with this. And to me, my preference, and I think this comes from just, like I said, being raised in a Black queer body, that's a conversation that I would like to leave to Jewish people. What do you think of that? Figure it out for your community. That's up to you guys, whatever. For the rest of us, we need to examine our anti-Semitism.
Right. Yeah, we do. We do. And I think that that's why we tried to have quotes from different perspectives, because who are we to speak on this not being Jewish, right? Not it's not going to impact us in the same way. We're not going to have that same you know, reaction to seeing these images and reading these things. Like, there may be some overlap, but I think it's more of us to kind of, like you said, really let that community speak their truth. And there's going to be a variety, and there is no right or wrong within that. I think there's also that can be harmful when an outside community is basically taking like one of these quotes out of context and saying like, look, this is what the Jewish community is saying. Like, that's one perspective. And the Jewish people are diverse and vast and are all over the world. Like, even us showing a couple quotes and showing the range doesn't capture it all. And we're not here to pretend that it does. It's to prove a point that that is the respect that we need to pay any community we're talking about, whether we're talking about anti-Semitism or racism towards the Black community or to trans folks. Like, it's all there's going to be a variety of opinions.
There will be,
and those are all valid.
All valid. And if you want to read any of this, we will link all these into our show notes for today's episode. And I also want to, I don't know, just probably like a closing thought. This is my closing thought for this episode. Is, to me, this is the importance of being able to examine something outside of your own gaze. Of, I think it's very easy to look at something and say, wow, this would really harm me. Therefore, I assume it's harming other people. When maybe not. Maybe that's not actually the takeaway from that. Maybe the takeaway is, huh, that would harm me. I am now curious about if other people are feeling the similar way. And not just stopping when you do find the article that connects with exactly how you're feeling. Yeah. Keep going. Yeah. Keep looking. Read some more ideas around this. Read some more connections with it. And for me, I will say, as a queer, trans-identified person who is playing Hogwarts Legacy, I'm also choosing to not engage in debates about why I'm choosing to do that. I don't care, honestly.
Right?
About other people's opinions on this. I'm open to hearing, your opinion, but I'm not going to defend mine.
Yeah, and I think to your point, what I'm taking away from this conversation is that reminder to not make assumptions. Like you said, you know, this may be impacting me or not impacting me, but is it impacting others? And I think that the potential to miss the opportunity to explore more is that second point of, if I don't find that this impacts me personally, well, it's probably not a thing. I think that is, my previous comment about the laziness factor kind of comes in of, why am I thinking that? That's interesting. Considering this world has how many people in it, you know, if there is even a hint of something, this could be a thing. Why is this not on my radar? Or why am I having such a strong reaction to this of thinking this is just the most offensive thing I've seen.
Right.
And I think the truth is extremely rarely rigid and black or white. And we have to be, yeah, I like that. Be curious. I like how you said that. And I think it's about asking questions, but also like not putting the labor and the work on someone else to like explain something to you or to, do that research. Like, oh, I have other people in this community. Let me go ask every single one of them to tell me in detail like what they think about this. Like, how is that going to impact people in your life? Agreed. That might actually be entirely stressful and problematic in its own way. It could be like, hey, I noticed this thing. Is this something on your radar? Like, are you open to talking about it? And just have those conversations. And I think sometimes those can be hard, but there's a way to practice it. And sometimes, let's be real, we're going to fail.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, thanks for joining us for this episode of That's Your Opinion. Let us know if you liked this two-part
We'd format. Love to hear from you.
Part one, part two. It was not intentional.
We just had a lot to say, and we were like, we don't want to have folks listen to the two-hour-plus episode. Might be a lot, especially given the content, and yeah, it's pretty heavy today. So thanks so much for joining us, and we will see you again soon in the next episode.
Oh, and if you have any opinions you'd like for us to consider and tell you how you're wrong, please email us at fixmyopinion@gmail.com.
Until next time.
Abbiento.